I'm Linda Formicelli, and I'm here with Den Mother Carol Tice.
Hey.
So last week we offered practical hands-on tips on how to handle specific freelancing situations that make you shake in your boots, like negotiating, client meetings, setting your prices, and all sorts of situations. But in our survey, we discovered that while most writers have a specific fear like that, I'm afraid of negotiating, I'm afraid of meeting clients. A lot of us are afflicted with this sort of general free-floating anxiety, and these writers can't put their finger on exactly what they're afraid of, but whatever it is, it keeps them from pitching and writing. So today, we're going to talk about several overarching fears that occur no matter what the situation is in writing. We're going to cover fear of failure, fear of success, and their symptoms like perfectionism and procrastination. Because no matter what fear is bugging you, chances are it results in procrastination, and that's the biggest problem we hear writers face. These fears are causing you to put off writing and pitching and building your writer website and networking, and that's a big deal because your success depends mainly on these activities. So we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about procrastination today. Now, we really don't recommend spending a lot of time navel gazing and wondering, why am I afraid and how can I be less anxious? While we're going to offer tips on those things as well, the only real way to beat the fear is to get to work and just find out that most of your worst fears never happen, and procrastination keeps that experience from happening. It keeps you from learning everything is going to be okay. So while we need to take care of the anxieties that are causing us to procrastinate, it's even better to have some specific practical tactics for beating procrastination so you can tackle the problem kind of from both ends. And yes, we will be going writing, but we're going to be offering a lot more advice on how to just get to work in spite of it all. As the book titled by Susan Jeffers goes, feel the fear and do it anyway. By the way, I highly recommend that book. So let's get to the specific fears first, and then we'll dive into the topic of procrastination. And first up is Carol, fear of rejection. For so many writers, nothing feels worse than pouring your heart and soul into writing a query letter or a sales letter and getting a no thank you from a prospect, or even just getting radio silence. And it's so easy for writers to think, oh, rejection means I stink as a writer. And some even think rejection means I stink as a person. Carol?
Yeah, we just had a writer comment in the den. I've been pitching for 3 months without a response. So does this mean it's time to give up because I'm not good enough to do this? No, that's not what it means. It could mean lots of things. It could mean you need to learn more about pitching. Maybe you're pitching the wrong kinds of clients. They're not the kind that hire freelance writers. I can think of about 100 other things besides it means I'm not a good enough writer. It's not some kind of referendum on your writing skills when you meet with rejection.
Okay, awesome. So, to flourish as a writer or as any kind of entrepreneur, you need to get over the fear of rejection because it is going to happen. And of course, that's easier said than done, but we have some tips on making that happen. So, our fear of rejection fix number one is work in volume. And by that, we mean you get out there as many pitches and articles and blog posts and cold calls and everything else as possible. And we have a really good reason for that. When you send out a query to that dream magazine and then you wait at your laptop for an acceptance that never happens, it can be devastating. I mean, that was your one giant hope. The query was your baby. You worked so hard on it, and all your hopes are hanging on this one piece of marketing. But if you have like 20 queries circulating, each rejection gives you 1/20th of the pain because you're less invested in any one pitch. And even better is to have each pitch out there to several different markets, which is called simultaneous querying. Some editors look down on this, but my take is that if they're going to take 6 weeks or more to get back to you or not even respond, then this is just what we have to do to stay in business. I have a blog post on the ins and outs of simultaneous pitching that I'm going to pop into the chat now. So we're talking about marketing and volume, and it has more of a benefit than keeping you from freaking out over rejection. It also gives you more of a chance of success. Freelance writing is a numbers game, so the more you have out there, the better your chances are. I interviewed one writer for the Renegade Writer blog who sent out 300 letters of introduction and ended up getting a dozen regular clients. And by the way, I do think I'm going to work on a book called Volume Marketing because I think it's super important. There you
Ooh,
go. So, Carol?
I like that idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, because it's really key. So I have fear of rejection, fix number two, which is to remember it's not personal. If your idea or your writing is rejected by a prospective client or an editor, it's a simple business decision they're making. Your offering wasn't right for that prospect at this time. And that might be because they have something similar in the works. The magazine's being revamped. The prospect is going out of business. The editor is moving to another publication. That prospect is in a bad mood today. Literally, I could like list dozens and dozens and dozens of reasons that have nothing to do with the quality of your submission. You know, it's like when you're in the grocery store and one of those people handing out samples asks you to try a chicken wing coated with a new barbecue sauce, and you say no thanks. Is that a judgment call on the actual person? Do they think I should stop being a sample person because I'm not good at it? It just means you're full because you had lunch, or you're a vegetarian, or you don't like barbecue sauce, or, you know, think about the many reasons that there could be. And it's the same with writing. If a prospect says no, it's almost always about them and not about you. Right, Linda?
Totally right. So our fear of rejection fix number three is develop a thick skin. And again, this is easier said than done, but when you get a rejection, you need to develop this attitude where you think you're lost. Next. I've been freelancing full time since 1997, and I estimated once that I've gotten over 100 or 100, huh, 500 ideas rejected, and each one of those was sent to multiple markets. And yeah, I've always made a really good living with my writing. If I had a thin skin when it comes to rejections, I would be working in a cubicle somewhere right now and I wouldn't be sitting on the porch. So the next time you get a rejection, make it a point to say, and you can even say this out loud, say it in the mirror, just say, oh, well, next, even if you don't really feel that way right now. And then immediately send that pitch somewhere else or work on a new one because, again, with the volume marketing, the more you pitch, the more you'll get work, and that attitude you're faking now will soon be for real. So, on to the next slide. Yes, fear of rejection fix number four is to consider rejection a positive experience. I actually wrote a guest post on Copyblogger on this very topic. It was called Five Reasons You Should Embrace Rejection. But in short, if you don't want to read that post, rejection is a learning experience. The more you pitch, the more likely it is that you'll score one of those what we call nice rejections from a prospect that will include a tip or two on what they want, and it shows you how to improve your pitching. That's actually how I broke into Women's Day. I sent a pitch. I sent many pitches, and the editor finally took pity on me and wrote back and said, you know, I'd like to see a little more research in a query. And I took her advice, repitched, and broke into Women's Day, started using her tip, broke into Redbook, broke into Family Circle. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, I got, you know, got a rejection that included its tip, and suddenly I was landing assignments from all my dream markets. So that's one of the benefits of rejection. Another benefit is that it clears away the competition for you. You probably heard the expression, a winner is just a loser who doesn't quit, which, or who didn't quit, which is one of my favorites. And it's really true. Too many writers get one rejection or a couple rejections and they just give up. But you're not going to do that. The quitters are now out of your way thanks to rejection, and you're going to persevere and start getting work. So you should thank rejection. Yes, Carol.
What I said to Brooke's comment of, do you ever still get afraid, was only every day. And that's the big point of this training, is that we want you to realize that these fears are not going away. It's all about learning to manage them. And, you know, all these techniques we're throwing out to you are ways to approach the fears that you have that help you just continue doing what you want to do, rather than curling up in a ball and, you know, not doing anything. Oh, I sent one query, didn't get an answer, therefore I'm a horrible person and now I die. You know, instead you say, ooh, one step closer to yes. Each no, you know, people who do cold calling say each no gets you one step closer to a yes. So I have rejection tip number five, which is to turn this on its head and actively seek out rejection. And I'm going to shoot you the post I did about someone who decided to do that. He was an entrepreneur at the time, trying to do a startup, and when he got rejected for funding, he felt incredibly crushed and like his world was crumbling. And he decided that was a big problem and that he needed to learn how to deal with rejection so that he could launch a business. And he started a project called 100 Days of Rejection, that where he went out and actively sought out, that talks about what he did and the crazy, incredible things that happened when he started asking people things he felt sure to be told no on, and many of them said yes, and it was a life-changing experience for him, could be for you too. So the thing about rejection is it's not something to fear, because it's a total 100% for sure situation that it's going to happen. So you don't have to be afraid it's going to happen. Like, I'm afraid a tree might fall on my house or something. This is something that's definitely going to happen. So what you want to do is move from fearing it to planning for it. And I recently sent out a post. If you're on my blog list, you heard about me going to hear Jonathan Evason talk about his new novel. He's the author of Revised Fundamentals of Caregiving and all about Lulu, hot books that are, one of which is being made into a movie. And he talked about how he wrote 9 novels before his first novel. And before his novel, All About Lulu, was accepted. And he kept all of his rejections in like a giant box by him while he was writing. And he regaled us with stories of how terrible his cover letters were, and he just kept writing. He wasn't afraid of rejection. He would go down to the mailbox and go, "Oh, look at this one, has a little handwritten note. Yay!" You know, it, like, he just, to him, it was a complete laugh. It was just part of his working writer's life. He completely accepted it and just kept on writing. And so should you. This is just not a reflection on your talent.
Yes, and I couldn't find a good photo, so I use a photo of a sheep. Sorry, because I happen to have it. Anyway, fear of rejection fix number 7 is do it anyway. And I mentioned the book "Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway" by Dr. Susan Jeffers, and it tells us that the bravest people aren't fearless; they feel fear just like anyone else. But the difference is that they do things in spite of their fear. So if you feel a jolt of anxiety before sending a query, you just acknowledge the feeling and you hit send anyway. You know that the feeling of discomfort is the worst that is really going to happen, and it can't kill you. The only way to build up comfort is through experience, so you have to just kind of suck up the fear and just make it happen. Carol?
So I have a fear buster number 8, which is to confront your exact fear and vanquish it. So like if you have a fear of rejection, you want to set up a scenario where you could get an editor to reject you. You know, maybe you have an editor friend, or you could say, "I could just show this to you, and could you just send me a like scathing reply about how much you hate it?" And just do that. I learned this in a songwriting group where people would be afraid to play their song, and because people might laugh. And so then they'd play it and we'd laugh. And they'd see that, first of all, that's probably never going to happen. And also that you survive, you're fine. And once you do and experience that worst thing in the world that you're fearing, it really loses its power to terrify you. If you have an opportunity to do that sort of thing, I just really strongly recommend it. And I think that's on our homework challenge sheet. And if it isn't, it should be. Anyway, we're going to move on to our second big
Yes.
type of fear we're going to talk about today. Go, Linda.
Yep, and that's the fear of success. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe, but, or maybe it's not, but a lot of writers are afraid of succeeding. And one of my very favorite quotes is by the author Marianne Williamson, and it goes, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure." And I'm going to ask you to kind of play along with me, and we're going to do a little exercise right now that for many of us will prove the truth of that quotation. I want you to just take a few seconds, close your eyes, and imagine, what if you reached your freelancing dreams? You're working at home, you're just steps away from your office, you don't have that commute on a packed freeway every day, you're making a living doing what you're passionate about, you're earning even better than you did at your last 9-to-5 job. You can work on the road, which makes it possible to travel more and have more fun. So I'm going to give you a few seconds, and I want you to really paint that picture in your head. Okay, so you have a picture of what it's like to be as successful as you want to be. And when you imagine yourself that way, how are you feeling? And surprisingly, if you're like many people, you would expect to feel elated and excited, of course, but instead you might be a little bit anxious. And that is normal. I'm I'm going to read you an excerpt from an article on the Psychology Today website about why we have this fear of success. It's slightly edited. It says, for some people, the excitement of success feels uncomfortably close to the feeling of arousal they experience when subjected to a traumatic event. People who have experienced trauma may associate the excitement of success with the same physiological reactions as trauma. They avoid subjecting themselves to excitement-inducing circumstances, which causes them to be almost phobic about success. And it goes on, there is another layer to the fear of success. Many of us have been conditioned to believe that the road to success involves risks such as getting one's hopes up, which threatens to lead to disappointment. And many of us, especially if we've been subject to verbal abuse, have been told we're losers our whole lives in one way or another. We've internalized that feedback and feel that we don't deserve success. Even those of us who were not abused or otherwise traumatized often associate success with uncomfortable things such as competition and its evil twin, envy. So that's the end of the quotation. And I mean, that's just a couple of the reasons that people might fear success. There are lots of reasons we fear the responsibility that will fall on us if the world recognizes our greatness and our talents. We fear that others won't accept us if we live a life that's different from the usual, as you can see in the picture on the slide. We're afraid people will think we're arrogant and egotistic, and I get all of that. But now we've talked a little bit about why so many writers fear success. Maybe they have past trauma or afraid of looking arrogant. They fear they won't be able to handle it. But the big question is, so what? The thing is, while we never advise spending a lot of time navel gazing about the whys, throwing a light on our fears helps us diminish them. We realize the fears are mostly unfounded and they don't need to hold us back. So just figuring out why we're afraid of success can help us put that fear to rest through rationalization. But we also have some exercises you can use to help banish the success. Carol? Oh, that's me. So, fear of success fix number one. Ask yourself, how bad is it really? I have an anxiety disorder. I've always had it. And during cognitive behavioral therapy one time, I learned a really handy trick. You dig down to your worst fear and you ask yourself how likely it is that it will happen. So, say you're afraid of being successful, and the therapist would say, "Well, what's the worst that could happen?" And you'll say, "Oh, I'll be so successful that all my friends will ditch me." And then the therapist would say, "So what?" And you'd say, "Well, then I'll have no friends left." And then the therapist would say, "So what?" And you'd say, "Well, I'll never be able to make new friends either." "Well, so what?" And then you say, "Well, I'll die sad and alone." So you can do this on your own. You don't need a therapist. And then you ask yourself, how likely is it that you're going to die sad and alone because you became a successful freelancer? And the correct answer is not very likely. This exercise is really helpful in revealing how silly and unreasonable some of our fears are.
I have fear of success. Fix number two, which is to buddy up. I think that, fears really grow in the dark. They like to grow while we're all alone by ourselves, just sitting, thinking our bad thoughts by ourselves. And if you get a writer friend that you talk to once a week or every morning for 5 minutes or whatever you work out, I just think a lot of these fears really fall away. You realize that they also have the same fears, which really normalizes it. You feel like less of a freak. And you also realize those fears are surmountable. You can brainstorm ways to get around them. Just, choose a buddy with a positive attitude and feed each other positive, thoughts. And it can make a huge difference. And just to enlarge on that with freelance fix number three is to join the conversation rather than one buddy. You might need a writer's forum, say like we have in the Den, or on LinkedIn Writers and Editors, or where Healthcare Writers of America, or wherever it is you like to hang out. You'll just see that these fears are very commonplace, and you'll be able to ask questions, about those specific fears that you have, like I need to bid this gig, I don't know what to say, all of those kind of things. And it'll just be, it's just really empowering. I mean, I feel like that's the big reaction we get from everyone who joins the Den. They're like, oh my God, people who understand what I'm going through. It's such a relief. And you right away feel more emboldened to do what you want to do. And
Awesome.
Linda is having a moment here. Hang on.
Yes. I told Carol I decided I want to offer everybody a free copy of my ebook, The Crackpot Code, Screw Normal, and Live the Life You Want. And there's a lot in this little book about why you shouldn't care about what other people think when you become successful. But I do want to end this section with the rest of that Marianne Williamson quote that starts, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure." It goes on, "It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our fear, our presence automatically liberates other." So that's just one of my favorite quotes. Carol?
It kind of gets back
Yeah.
to that limited, okay, good. That limited pie theory that, you feel like there's only so much success to go around, and so it would be mean of me to take some of that pie. But the world isn't like that. We all have unlimited potential, and things can get way better for way everyone.
And
Anyway,
can I just mention, oh, I just wanted to mention, I think especially women have this problem where you don't wanna show your true talents because you're afraid it's gonna make other people feel bad when they're around you. And this quote, I think, really addresses that well.
right on. So we're on to our big topic number three, which is perfectionism, another, expression of fear that plagues writers and keeps them from being able to do this as a paid living. You can't out send out enough queries because each one you have to labor over. It's not perfect. I actually had someone recently tell me that they had been working for on a query for a year. This is bad. Perfectionism is this. It is a really negative symptom of fear. It's a handy excuse that lets you not do all that scary writing and marketing. You say, no, but it's not good enough yet. And we're gonna help you snap out of this with a few perfectionism tamers, Linda.
Yes. So perfectionism tamer number one is, remember, there's no such thing as perfect. Many writers are afraid to send out their stories and queries and articles and proposals because they're not quote unquote perfect yet. But here's something to think about. There's no such thing as perfect. Every editor and every potential client is a unique person with his own likes and dislikes. Perfect from one client will be a nightmare for another one. One editor might like anecdotal leads in an article, and one will think they're lazy. One client will think the blog post, the more blog post ideas, the better, and another will be overwhelmed with more than a couple. So, since you can't read your writing prospect's mind, the best you can do is just do your best work, and then once it's out of your hands, that's it. It's the client's turn. And you can turn your attention to keeping busy doing more work, like we talked about before with the volume marketing. If you're still afraid a client might not like your work and will complain about it, you might want to revisit lesson one, where we talked a lot about that. Carol?
Yeah. So I have perfection tamer number two, which is to value completion, not perfection. Perfection leads to endless list making and mountains of incomplete projects that you're never quite getting to the end of. What matters most is in freelance writing is your ability to start and complete projects, whether it's an article you need to turn in or marketing you need to send out. I could name many top bloggers for you whose blog posts all have typos in them every day, particularly online in the sphere of rapid iteration and, lean launch and, ready, fire, aim type mentality. Content quality is valued and treasured over perfect delivery. So let it go. Just realize it does not matter. Every once in a while I'll get someone who says, oh, I saw a typo in one of your articles, and I thought you might want to fix it, and they don't understand that at the speed at which I am having to crank things out and create in order to help people, in order to fulfill my mission, which is to help more writers earn more money more faster, more of the time. That's right, Caitlin says my typo insurance policy of all online blog comments and blog posts cover you on this. So really think about that. If you're turning in an article draft to an editor, They're going to edit it anyway. Really, if it's got one typo in it, it's okay. Sometimes I'll turn in an article and I'll say to an editor, I really couldn't decide about whether it should end this way or that way. I put in this one, but let me know if you want the other one. It's okay. It doesn't have to be some magical, unachievable, perfect level of done. Just press send or publish. Linda?
So what the heck is typo insurance? Is that a joke that I'm not getting, or is it really typo insurance?
Oh, when people come leave a comment on my blog and then they come back and say, "Oh no, that comment has a typo on it. I meant to say this." I say, "You're covered by my typo insurance policy and you don't have to come back." And like, we know what you meant. It's okay. So that's really an
Oh, that's
example of.
hilarious. Okay, thank you for explaining that. Yes, perfectionism tamer number three is to make mistakes, and I really mean that. I want you to purposely make a mistake to help beat out your perfectionist tendencies. And I mean, it just can't be worse than some of the things I've put out there. I asked, but one time I sent a query on the subject line, query, what's that smell? Linda Formicelli. Because I had learned that you should put your name at the end of your query so that they could find it easier. Okay, so yes, I sent out a query to an editor titled, "What's That Smell?" Linda Formicelli. So, I mean, and by the way, I made that sale. So I had one mentoring client that I suggested she purposely make a typo or make a mistake or something like that, send an email to an editor with a typo in it. And she thought I was nuts, but then the next day she was sending an email to an editor. And wouldn't you know it, the instant the email zapped off her screen, she realized there was a big typo right in the first sentence. And guess what happened? A couple hours later, the editor responded and showed an interest in her idea. So you might want to try this experiment for yourself to help get over that block of perfectionism. Email with a little typo, wear two different socks, whatever. Chances are no one will notice, and even if they do notice, they probably won't care. Making mistakes this way will help you get used to and overcome the discomfort you feel when you're less than perfect. And by the way, I believe, yes, this is one of the homework challenges, so that's a good one to try. Perfectionism tamer number four is challenge perfectionist thoughts, and this is another cognitive behavioral therapy technique that works really well. You pretend you're a trial lawyer, and when a perfectionist thought pops up, like, if I don't get this article perfect, the editor will never hire me again, and my career is in the toilet. You examine the evidence just like a lawyer would. Have you ever made a mistake in an article? Probably yes. Did your career die? No. So if you have trouble making this shift from perfectionist thinking to more realistic thinking using this trick, you can also ask other writers for evidence you can use. For example, you could ask on a forum like the Den forum, who here has made a mistake in an article and their career did not go down the toilet? And then you can use their responses to boost your lawyer, your lawyerly case against perfectionism. Carol?
Yeah, you bet. I was just commenting in the chat that I had a friend who published an ebook like on Amazon, and it was just a raw transcript of a talk he had been at with no corrections whatsoever. And I was like, "Wow, do you feel comfortable with that?" And he said, "Yep, my audience is entrepreneurs, and they don't care. They get it. They get that I'm going really fast." And I was like, "Wow, so just realize other people's standards are like not yours." So I have perfection tamer number five. If you could mute Linda, remember that no one is watching. I think writers seem to think that the eyes of the world are upon them. But in reality, it's more like what I used to tell myself before I'd go on to sing a song in my 20s, which is to remember that no matter what happens on this stage tonight, a billion Chinese could care less. Linda found this study a while back about people having good hair days and bad hair days. And like the people in the photos were really clear, "Oh, this is so bad," but the research subjects could not tell which was the bad hair day. We're more critical of ourselves than others are. So cut yourself a break, really. People are generally not thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves, just like you are. So I think that concept gives people a wonderful sense of freedom from perfectionism. And because why should you bother to be perfect if no one is noticing anyway?
Yeah, now we're going to talk about the big one that I think we all want to talk about, beating procrastination. One major outcome of the common writer fears we talked about is this: procrastination. Since we writers own our own businesses, we're the boss, so there's no one to tell us what to do and when to do it. And of course, that's really good news. But the bad news is, without somebody breathing down your neck and telling us what to do and when to do it, we often let our fears rule, and then we just don't take any action at all. While procrastination is often caused by fear, today we're going to talk about various ways to blast it, no matter what fear is behind it. We're just going to kind of go at it from both ends. And we have procrastination buster number one. Carol, slide. Yes. It is figuring out your big why. You need to have a good why behind your writing goals. Why do you want this? Why is it important to you? What values do you have that will be fulfilled by making this goal? For example, most writers set income goals, but for a lot of people, these goals don't really resonate with them enough to spur them into action. They're like, yeah, I want to make six figures, and then, you know, they just don't even try. And I'm really an example of that. For years, I created a New Year's goal to make a certain amount of income, and every year, I did nothing different from what I did the year before, and I was like, oh, I didn't make it. I guess I'll try again next year. And finally, I realized that money goals are just not motivating to me. They're just not. What is motivating to me, I figured out, is freedom. As long as I can help support my family, we can send our kid to private school, we can travel a lot, the bills are paid, we're good. However much that is, we're good. So thinking about how my writing is supporting my family, it's funding a vacation, it's keeping me from slaving away in a cubicle 8 hours a day, that keeps me really busy and spurs me into action. So you need to ask yourself, what really motivates you and how can you relate it to your work? Is it the ability to be at home with your kids more, being able to work on the road while you travel? Do you value freedom or entrepreneurialism or service to others? Your values are what will motivate you to take action much more than an arbitrary goal that just sounds good but doesn't really resonate with you. Carol?
Absolutely. So I have the next two procrastination busters, which are kind of related to each other in a way. The first is to set concrete quantifiable goals. I think there's a lot of procrastinating that occurs because what we want to do is just kind of vague. You know I should send more query letters. I don't have a goal about how many I need to send this week. You know I should find out more about how to write case studies, or it's just all kind of vague and squishy, and then we don't know what to do, so we don't do anything. So you want to set really concrete goals, and goals you can control. Not I will get 3 clients this month, but I will send out 25 letters of introduction. Keep it all, you know, in your court so you can get the win and say, I did what I said I would do. It's really worth it. And if you find even those goals are impossible, then you move to the next step, which is to chunk down those goals into smaller bites. And I'll just share, Linda likes this book, Mini Habits, that you see on the screen there. I'll just tell you. And I'll just tell you that when I have a big feature assignment, I am often just like completely paralytically terrorized. I'm just immobile. I'm not doing anything. And the way I get out of it is to do the tiniest thing. For instance, today I am just going to look up 3 possible experts for this story, and I'm going to write down their email addresses or their PR person's email address or whatever. And that's all I'm doing today. That's it. So that seems pretty non-threatening, doesn't it? I'm just looking at possible sources. That's all. And then tomorrow I'm going to email one of them. That's all. I don't have to email all of them because that's too scary for me. I'm just going to do the one. So, and then the next one. And you know what? Now the wheels are turning and that article gets done, and it gets done on time, because once you start, it all gets easier. Well begun really is half done, as I gather Aristotle said. I looked it up. I thought it was Ben Franklin, but that was not what my research revealed. So, you know, if your goal is to break into a magazine, for instance, you might spend an hour looking over that magazine and brainstorming ideas, choose one idea, spend an hour researching it online, and the next small goal, maybe the next day, is to write a lead of a query or write the headline of it. You know, it's easy to procrastinate on a goal that isn't due real soon. So, you know, the tiny habits and the tiny steps, really, it may seem idiotic, it may seem childish, but it totally works. Don't be ashamed to make tinier and tinier goals. Linda?
Yes. And we have procrastination buster number four, get up and move a little. I once read The Complete Idiot's Guide to Overcoming Procrastination, and the author, Michelle Tullier, wrote that if you don't want to get up and take care of some task, just stand up and stretch with no expectation of doing anything else. Moving your body creates a sort of momentum that will motivate you to take action on your writing goals. Because it's really that initial few moments of taking action where you feel resistance. It's just the getting started part. And if you just make yourself get up, you'll get over that resistance hump and probably be able to get to work. So we have procrastination buster number five, which is recruit a friend. Years ago, a goal buddy and I started doing what we call boot camps. And they're not like this kind of boot camp. What it was we would check in with one another by phone every hour during the day to report on what we did in the last hour and what we're going to do in the next hour. So you can do the same. You can recruit a buddy to do boot camp, and on that day, you let them know, I'm going to write this much, or I'm going to network with these many prospects in the next hour, or I'm going to get this page on my website done in the next hour, or I'm going to write a blog post. And then the hour afterwards, you call again and you say, okay, I got that done, or I didn't get that done. Here's what I'm going to do the next hour. And even if there's no punishment or reward involved with getting the task done, which we never did that, somehow just being clear on what you plan to do every hour and stating it out loud to someone is a really powerful way to beat procrastination, no matter what fear is causing it. Carol?
Procrastination buster number six is to reframe what you're doing. When you're procrastinating, writers love to tell me, I'm dying to get to work on my novel, but I'm really procrastinating on it. And when people hand me that line, I tell them that they are not really procrastinating. I kind of have bad news for procrastinators out there, because really, if you think about it, we are never procrastinating. We're never putting off the thing we really want to do. In every moment, we are prioritizing and doing the thing that matters most to us. You're making a conscious choice not to write now, or that, you know, doodling around on Facebook or binge watching Game of Thrones, talking to myself here, is more important than the key writing task you know you should be doing. And yes, maybe you need to take the kids to soccer right now, but the big thing is, over time, if you look at a month of your time, you are choosing the way you really want to spend your time. So if you're never doing marketing or you're never doing writing, you really have to look in the mirror and say, do I really want to do this, or is this just something I like to kid myself around about? Or can I really go for this? You know, and, you know, circle back to what Linda said. What does writing mean to me here? You know, what's on the line here for me? Linda?
Great. And I was in the chat. Did you mention tracking your time?
I didn't, but it's definitely a revealing exercise.
Yeah, in fact, I should have mentioned this on a slide, but one of my favorite books is 168 Hours You Have More Time Than You Think by Laura Vanderkam. And it's really eye-opening, really interesting. And on her website, I think it's my168hours.com, you can get downloads of her time tracker sheets. It's quite awesome. So procrastination buster number seven is beat the boredom. Because on top of the fears that are causing you to procrastinate, there's the minor issue that a lot of freelance writing can really be boring. I mean, we all imagine, you know, sitting on the beach, writing about things we love. But in real life, we're sitting there, you know, in our living room, doing an assignment on a topic we don't really care about, marketing, sending contracts, sending invoices, and that can be really boring. But here's a tip. Whenever I had a boring assignment to work on, I would always try to liven up my work by injecting a little bit of humor. So, for example, once I was writing an article for Family Circle where I had to look up the nutritional values for all kinds of foods and then write about them. And, you know, the writing was fine, but just the looking up was just such a yawner. So I decided to have some fun with the topic by making the article really funny. And I included the phrase, when the fat hits your thighs from a big pizza pie, that's not amore. And my editor, after I turned this article, she literally called me up to let me know she almost fell out of her chair laughing. And I mean, I had a really great time writing what could have been a boring, detailed diet piece with numbers. And I scored points with my client as well. Also, try to keep in mind that a key character trait of successful freelancers is curiosity. Can you find anything interesting about vacuum cleaner technology or self-storage operations or cleanliness for pizza restaurant owners? I have written on all these topics, by the way. And as for marketing, if you find it boring, a trick I like to use is to think about all the exciting things that come out of it. You get fun assignments, the money pays for a great vacation, the dull task supports the rest of the freelancing lifestyle. So marketing or some other aspect of writing that you've been procrastinating on might be boring to you, but the results of marketing are really exciting. And I have to add, every job has things we don't like and things that are boring. So I think maybe we expect freelance writing to be just like a total piece of cake, wonderful fun ride. And when we realize there are some dull parts, it can set us back a little bit. So we have to remember it is a job. Carol?
Yeah, true enough. And if you do a big marketing push, often, the thing to remember if you're starting and you're doing a big marketing push is that it won't be like this way forever. It's an initial crazy push that you really need to do to get your business ramped to where you're fully booked with enough clients. And from there, you don't have to do as much aggressive marketing. It gets easier and easier. You start to get referrals. It will get better too. So don't think, oh my God, I'm doomed to this forever. So this has all really been the prelude to the really core thing we want to get to in this training. And I can see that once again, we are going to need to take questions after the hour. So I apologize already because this is the heavy stuff. And we're not going to flash through it because we're near the end of the hour. The root of all evil behind all the four things we have already talked about, fear of failure, fear of success, perfectionism, procrastination, it's all coming back to a single root cause, low self-esteem. At base, we procrastinate. We are a perfectionist because we think we're not good enough. We think we don't deserve this. I just had one Den 2X writer tell me that she was sorry to hear that our pitch clinic editor was a Forbes print magazine editor because she couldn't imagine ever writing for Forbes. She wanted it to be from the blog because she felt like that would be less terrifying and like something she could imagine her being worthy of. And I this is just an epidemic. I mean, that's just one tiny example. If you believe in yourself and you believe that writing is the precious gift you have to give this world, and that is how your light shines, then no outside force should be able to stop you from writing and putting it out there. These fears only stop us when we don't believe. When inside our heads, that little voice is saying, you're not really talented. You're not so much. You don't deserve happiness. You have flaws. You don't deserve to live the life of your dreams where you don't have to work a day job and you still earn lots of money. And if this is you, we're going to stop right now and deal with this. And I'm going to throw out a lot of ideas. I'm going to be sharing some stuff from my own life that I have actually never told anyone about in a freelance writing context. And here I go. So the first one is to start dealing with your self-esteem and start building yourself up. My dad taught me to look in the mirror every morning and say, "Damn, I'm good. There I am, the one and only me in this world. Nobody else has got what I've got." And that's true of every one of us. Nobody else can write it like you. And the world needs what you have. And you have to believe that. Another way to do this is to write positive statements and post them where you can see them. I know a lot of people who do that. The refrigerator at our house is packed with uplifting thoughts about moving forward positively today and all kind of stuff like that. So that is one technique I want to share. Another is to get professional help, and it doesn't have to cost money. I gather meetup.com has all kinds of free, like walk and talk with a doc things you can go to. There are free support groups. I personally, at this point in my life, attend NAMI meetings, which is the National Association of the Mentally Ill, and I go to family support for families with mentally ill members, and that has been a lifesaver for my self-image. Al-Anon is incredible. If you are dealing with dysfunctional people you cannot control, whether they're alcoholics or not, I found their stuff incredibly powerful. And I really have never shared this with anyone in the writing community, but when my daughter went into puberty and became diagnosed bipolar and was violent and abusive, primarily directed towards me personally, I became suicidally depressed, and medication truly, I believe, saved my life. Don't be afraid to reach out for help if you need it. If just "I'm just going to try and snap out of it" is not working for you, think about getting professional help. And maybe it does cost money, but what would it be worth to you to be able to stop procrastinating and be able to do the writing you know you were meant to do? So that's my speech on that. My third tip is to adopt a spiritual practice of some type, and I'm going to tell you to start your day with it. Do it first, before you look on Facebook, before you look at TV, before anything else. And I have a shot there of the program I happen to be working right now. In the past, I have done a Thought a Day Al-Anon book that I was working my way through. Right now, I am working a Musar program, which is the Jewish philosophy of character improvement. And it's a year-long program where every week you're working on a particular character trait. And I just think it's hard to feel you're a bad person when you know that every morning you're doing something to bring light and goodness and positivity into the world and make yourself a better person. It's very, very powerful. And I really got that habit from Tim Sanders, who wrote Love is the Killer app. And self-esteem fix number four is to serve your community. I know you don't have time. It's all so crazy. But in Al-Anon, they have a saying for people who can do nothing but worry about what their alcoholic is doing. And that's "When I got busy, I got better." Stop worrying about and fearing things you can't control and make this world better. Many, many, many studies have shown that doing good makes you feel good, that people who are volunteering and taking action in their community have less depression, are happier, report, overall happier satisfaction levels. So I highly recommend it. And I personally actually have just taken this advice myself. My husband and I looked at each other and said, we keep waiting for the insanity level to go down, and we have to stop waiting and just start doing more. And we volunteered to be on the board of a camp that we attend and get involved in putting on the camp. And we're stepping up what we're doing, even though that the idea of that is like crazy. It just, yeah, Amy says it's the helping high. That's absolutely right. You feel like you can do anything when you touch other people's lives, make things better. So this is what I want for all of you, is to understand that you're so special and you have so much to contribute. And honest to God, don't let fear set you back. Sit there with your big box of rejections like Jonathan Evison and write it anyway. And that concludes our program. And Linda's going to tell us what's coming up, and then we're going to take questions.
Yeah, that was really great. But we're going to talk about what is coming up in Write Big. So last week you learned how to beat specific freelance fears, like the fear of negotiating and meeting with clients and setting your prices. And then this week we talked about how to quell those general overarching fears that keep you from taking action toward your writing goals, like the fear of failure and the fear of success. We also talked about perfectionism and procrastination, which come out of those fears a lot of times. And next week is going to be super fun because really well-known writer coach Marla Beck will be providing coaching to write. So, the homework. Do not forget to do the homework challenges. We have a list of 10 challenges. Yeah, Carol says, do the homework, people. I'm like, come on, I want to see people doing these challenges. They're really meant to actually put into action what you're learning here, because we don't want it all to be like, yay, I feel motivated, rah, rah, kumbaya, and then it just fades away. We want you to actually do things physically, actions that move you towards your goals.
And you know what? The point of all of our boot camps is the homework. We want you to take action and do things. Yeah, Amy, if that's something you've been afraid to do, yeah, you should go out and start cold calling right now. Yeah, I had this question that came in from Ray about that she was discouraged because she heard that the niche she wanted to do didn't have a lot of opportunity, and I don't remember what it was. Yeah, homework is next. Really, dive in. We want you to do three of the things on the challenge list. I said that, there's a couple, there's some posts on in the den about different fears, and Jeremy had one about dealing with doubtful family members. And my thing about people who are like, but why don't you just get a job, is don't talk to them about your work. Just talk to them about the weather. Talk to them about something else. If they ask how it's going, say, it's great, I love what I do. No, give them completely generic non-answers that do not open up the opportunity to go on to for them to grill you about what you do, why you do it, how you do it. If you are not asking them for money, as far as I'm concerned, you're paying your bills. Without their help, they have no standing to say anything negative to you about it, So I don't know. I think we may have gotten to these other, the other ones in the previous call that were left. So I think we're just up to live questions here. Someone who used to freelance and is wanting to get back into it. I write all the time, but not as a freelance writer. So what's stopping you, Cindy? So you have a portfolio. Maybe you think your clips are too old and you have to start over from scratch. You don't. There's no such thing as too old clips. I send out decade-old clips routinely if they demonstrate a knowledge I need to show. Yeah. I meet so many people with this hang-up, Cindy, who are like, oh, I had kids, a decade went by, and now the internet, I don't know. You're still a good writer, and you can still show that to people, and you can still get gigs, and you can learn how to write online. Oh, yeah. So Ray was saying she wants to write about mental health, psychology, self-improvement. Especially from someone who does not have a license to work as a therapist. That's actually an
Oh,
advantage, Ray.
yeah, Carol, can I say I've done a ton of personal development writing for like Family Circle and all different magazines. Yeah, it's kind of a benefit, like Carol was saying, because the professional therapists, they can't write. Your job as a writer and reporter, you're not an expert. You interview the experts. So you don't need to be an expert at all. Carol?
So Anquanette was saying, how do I present clips that aren't don't appear online? You get a PDF made of it. A lot of places have a reprint department, or just if you ask your client, they'll give you a PDF version, or make a PDF out of it, what you've got, and
And
put it up on
can I
your
give him a
site,
tip on that?
Google Document Embedder, and serve it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. For clips, what I have done for a long time is send prospects the Word file of the article as I turn it into my editor. And this is for a couple reasons. Number one is, after I've written for like 150 magazines, so eventually I kind of stopped keeping them. I had piles and piles. I just threw them all out. I was like, I know I'll be able to get these somehow if I ever need them again. So I didn't even have them. But also, I would tell the editor, oh, I sent you the Word file of the article as I turned it in, so you can see what my writing is like before the editor does her magic on it. And the editor can see, hey, you really can write in research, because a lot of clips that you see in these beautiful magazines are more the work of an editor fixing all the mistakes of the writer, so they can be really misleading. So that kind of gets over that hump. That's it.
Yeah. So Ray is saying, how do you approach people for an interview, especially in a teeny tiny isolated little town? Well, you're probably not going to do that many articles where your sources will be the people in a teeny tiny town. I happen to live on an island with a fairly low population, and I have interviewed people here maybe once, maybe twice, actually. I thought of another one. But for the most part, you're going to be interviewing people who are all over the country and the world, and you just ask them, just shoot them an email or call them up and say, hey, I'm writing an article about this. Could I talk to you for a few minutes? It's not very complicated. So someone was Dawn was saying, is it true that blogs don't pay well? In general, they don't pay well compared to other types of writing, but they're a source of ongoing work, is why a lot of us like them. And rates are going up, and more people are understanding the value in them. And I had a guest post on that on. Well, Linda hopefully takes another question. Can you take us how you
Yeah.
find someone who's a credible source? I feel like we did a thing on that.
Yeah, but I wanted to mention, what was it you just said? What was the last question you just did?
how to get people to talk to you for interviews.
No, there was something after that. Oh, no, I forgot. Anyway, yes, we have a question here on how to find credible sources. And really, you want to look at authors who are traditionally published, especially think tanks, organizations, associations, medical associations, hospitals, things like that. And eventually you're going to develop a sixth sense for who is really a credible expert and who is kind of trying to pass themselves off as an expert. For example, you might see somebody who has a really nice blog, but you notice all their books are self-published. And nothing against self-published books. I have a lot of them myself. But typically, if you're getting a traditionally published book, there's more of a gatekeeper there, making sure everything is correct and so on. So,
Everyone's putting in their Skype, so I'm putting in mine. Hey, I mean their Twitter handles. Let's see. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Oh, Brooke says, "Is my WordPress page considered a website?" Yeah, it probably is. A lot of people get confused about is this a website or is it a blog? A blog is just a feature of a website, and some of us set our blogs. Set our websites so that the blog is the home page. And so like when you go on my blog and you go on Make a Living Writing, you think I'm on a blog, but it's just another website that is set in blog format. And other people would stick that blog under a tab and have a home page. That's all.
sorry, I'm looking for that blog post I did on sources.
Linda, did you want to
Yep.
give some tips on earning well, writing about mental health, self-improvement type topics?
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of paint themselves into this box where they're like, I want to write about mental health topics, therefore I can only write about t for mental health magazines, and there are like three of them. Where if you kind of play with your ideas a little more, you can make them fit all different kinds of magazines. In fact, I am probably going to be writing for a big restaurant trade magazine. They're doing an entire issue on mental health and restaurant workers. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You have to be really creative in finding markets and then in playing with your topic in such a way that it'll fit any market. I've done a lot of personal development writing for health magazines and women's magazines. So just be really, really creative and don't just block yourself into I have to write for AD, ADD Attitude magazine or whatever. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, and I guess my tip is if you broaden it more into the overlap with like kind of into physical health care, then you're into a huge, huge topic. And don't just think about publications, but think about companies you could write for maybe that do health and wellness, bigger companies, not solopreneur type things. But a lot of the big health care providers now have companies that they're like outsourcing their big corporate wellness programs too and stuff. Those people need writers. You feel overshadowed by people who do business writing. Why? I got into it by accident after no training in it. I'll just share. just because I had someone I had written about who was a startup here in Seattle say, "Hey, could you ghost my blog?" This was like 2006, and I did not actually know what a blog was when he asked me that. And I was like, okay. And there's a lot of informational, non-salesy. I think people think when they think of writing for businesses that you're selling something, that it's all about writing sales pages and buy, buy, buy. But I've actually never done that for a client. I've only done that for my own writing coaching. Everything I've written is blog posts, white papers, case studies, like informational types of things. Yeah, Tina has a good idea. Thinking about sort of the mental, the psychology side of being an entrepreneur and pitching that to a business magazine. Yeah, Mike says, I can't think of any market segment that wouldn't be interested in mental health in some way. Yeah, MBAs have fear issues. Are you kidding? Yeah, you're starting
Yeah,
a
I mean, it
company,
affects
blah, blah, blah.
everyone. Any trade magazine you could probably think of would probably want, they're so used to getting pitched business and marketing and HR. It's like, well, who pitches mental health?
Yeah, and think about trade pubs. Then there's all the trade magazines for mental health professionals that also need articles. for people with a lot of expertise. And no, you don't have to be a licensed therapist to write for those magazines. I'll just tell you a quick story and then I think we should wrap up. When I broke into the LA Times, was one of my very first markets, because I wrote an essay in an essay contest that the real estate section was doing. And then he wanted me to write features for the cover of the real estate section of the Seattle Times. And I was just like, shouldn't I be a realtor or a mortgage broker or something? Shouldn't I know something about real estate? And he said, God, no. Have you ever seen realtors write? And then he just like laughed for 10 minutes. Not being an insider in an industry is a good thing. You come to it with the customer's eye on it, and you learn all about it, and then you can explain it. I think we've done it. Yeah, Mike says Psychology Today says no credentials needed in their writer's guidelines.
Yes, I've written for them several times. My husband wrote for them. Believe me, we are not mental health professionals.
Yeah, no human way. I write about all kind of things. I am not so not an expert in washing
Yeah.
machine technology and business finance, fine points, and yeah. All right, you adore our antics. Yeah, I
Ah,
personally
thank
have
you.
my hats off to Linda and all her fun captions in this slideshow. I feel like she's
Yeah,
taken it
thanks.
up a notch. She's taken it up a notch for Den Presentations today, and we're gonna have to stick with it.
Watch out.
Up
Now
you
you have to do it.
all.
Bye,
Yeah, now I have to rock it too.
everyone. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.